vote.
So I'm going to tell the similar story, but in relativistic theories.
What you're saying is...
After a short introduction, my main focus will be to see if these exponents correspond to some cascade. Then I will show you some numerical evidence. And at the end, I will have a few comments on the spectral function. Yeah, so first, it was noticed in cosmology, actually. So there, the universe has to go through an inflation, an epoch of inflation, that creates the initial condition for the standard cosmology. And one must build models to model how the inflation stops and how the particles are created for the hot Big Bang scenario. And one of these scenarios is called parametric resonance, where there is a homogeneous field in the universe which rolls down and then starts to oscillate in the bottom. And the interaction with the higher modes is such that this oscillation gives them an oscillating mass term. And if this mass term oscillation hits the resonant frequency, then those modes start to grow. So this is what's happening here. This is a particle spectrum as a function of momentum. And here, these modes were resonant, so they start to grow. A bit later, other modes catch up because they are also resonant. And at the end, the whole spectrum fills up. And what they notice here, that there is a low stationary state where they see a power low, and the spectrum just goes to infinity here, so it just fills up the looping. And the exponent that they see is the weak turbulent exponent. So this is kind of this whole story how it started in the particle physics community.
So what is eta?
It's kind of the time. It's the it's all moving time actually, but you can think of
simulation.
Oops. So this is now the third time that we see this slide. So from 2pi formalism, after some introducing this statistical and spectral function and result, we have scaling on that. And if we require that we want a stationary solution, then we have an equation which gives an equation of these exponents. And so the idea is that we start from some non-equilibrium, we get to this stationary solution with a strong exponent and a weak exponent, and in the end we get to the thermal. And here my point will be to see if this requirement of stationarity also is it corresponding to some cascade of some quantity. Oops. So my strategy will be the following. I will rewrite these 2pi equations in the form which is reminiscent of the Boltzmann equation. So I can write now some quantity. The time derivative of some quantity is an integral, which I can think of as gain and loss terms. Then I integrate this equation in a sphere, in momentum space, and if I do it, then I will get the flux out of this sphere. Now I put in some power law ansatz, and I require that this flux is constant, then I will get some exponents. And I again just put some definitions here which I will use. So we have statistical function and spectral function. And in equilibrium, they almost are the same. There is just one function here. And actually here, the main requirement is that this ratio of f and rho is only dependent on omega. That means that we are in equilibrium, but in any situation, we could just define the ratio of f and rho and just call that n. That n will be then dependent on p as well and not just omega. But it's a useful definition because then the formulas will look very similar to the Boltzmann case with some little differences. So let's deal first with the weak wave turbulence. There we can immediately put the spectral function to this form, which is just one peak, a delta peak, at an omega p, which here I just use this square root of m squared plus p squared. Then I have to define this, and from this spectral particle number, can with this integral just get the usual particle number. And I work, and then I use the 2pi equations, and then I can derive these equations, which is just as I said, it's the Boltzmann equation in principle, where the scattering integral looks like just what we expect. There are more terms, there are 1, 2, 3 terms, and one can argue that in some situations they are small, and then we can use the particle number conservation, and we can always use the energy conservation. So this description is valid only when the field is not too big, because if it's too big, then the 2-to-2 scattering will be already bigger than Ordo 1. So then, in that case, we have to come up with something new, and this will be the resummation that Thomas mentioned in the first. So let's just follow here the program. Now I want to use this continuity equation in Fourier space, which is of course not exact, but it's pretty well satisfied, because the phase space is only big for local interactions in Fourier space. So this is roughly true. And now I can just integrate this equation. And this is one, the integration of this on the sphere. And on the other side, I have this, which is then the flux. So this is proportional to the flux with some gamma functions give the area of the sphere. We don't care about this right now. And so I can write this. If I put in here the collision integral, then I can find out about scaling. Because in the collision integral, I can put in my scaling concepts. In this weak turbulence case, it's much simpler than the scaling concepts that I showed before, because it's in principle we already know that eta and z, eta is 0 and z is 1. We use that up, then we have used this form of the spectral function. So here it's only one exponent that is missing. And so I put all this information into this formula, and then I get that the ak is proportional to k to some power. And now if I want a constant flux, then I just set this to 0, and then I can rewrite and get. First I get this exponent, then if I do the same program with the other equation, then I get one more exponent for the
power. Actually, it's Sakharov and not Zakharov.
Yeah,
that's because yes, they're two very different people.
But in Cyrillic,
and Zakharov are actually
are right. The names spelled the same in Cyrillic or not?
Of course not. It's not the same in Cyrillic and not the same in any other language, including Hebrew. And they also mean from completely different things.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Sakhar is actually sugar in Russian, so. and Zakhar happened to be male in Hebrew, so I mean, they're just two different names. So that's Zakhar. It's Z. It's a B.
Yeah. This. Calculation used a scattering integral in which there were four particles involved. So it was a four vertex induction. We can do a similar with just three particles. That's an integral with one less propagators. And then we get a different exponent. And why I do this is because this is the one that we will see in the numerics. Okay, so this was a weak turbulence, and now we can come to the strong turbulence. So first, I just noticed that in relativistic field theory, there is no unique particle number definition, because the particle number is not a conserved quantity. And so we can use some, and this is what we do, we make up some formula that gives the right number in free field theory, and then we just carry on and use it in the interactive theory. And so this is what I'm also doing here. I had this formula in the big case, and because the spectral function was a delta, it was a really easy integral, but now our spectral function is not a big. I don't know what this is, so I cannot calculate it analytically, but I can just continue to call this an effective particle number.
This particle number is not an integral of motion of your initial equation like energy. It's an adiabatic invariant only in this weak turbulence approximation where you only account for scattering. Any other processes would just destroy it,
right?
Well, so you don't expect it to be necessarily valid in strong turbulence regime.
Right. What I can say in the following is that this is the quantity that has a cascade.
Mm-hmm. But it's not an integral of motion.
It's not. No.
I always wondered what happened with this cascade when it goes into a strong turbulence regime, where the integral is not actually an integral, because it's only in the weak turbulence, which is an adiabatic invariant in this case. Which opposite to Gross-Pitayevsky, where it is an exact integral, so cascade goes all the way. Okay, let's see.
So in this case, I'm not going into the details at all, but Thomas showed us that there is such a resummation scheme in which this collision integral, or the thing that looks like a collision integral, looks, if we just look here, looks almost like the old one. But if we look a little bit better, then we see that there are these lambda effective couplings appearing, which was this one over one plus the bubble. And this hides the bubble resummation of this theory. So, and this lambda effective, we can, from this formula, just find out what the scaling of this, and we just in this regime neglect this one and just find out what the scaling of the bubble is, as Thomas also did. From this formula, it just follows. And now the only approximation is I'm making is the classical approximation, and I don't have any limit on the n anymore, so this will be valid in high-end situations. But otherwise, I'm doing the same. I take this continuity equation, I plug in everything, then I get up some scaling of the flux, and I put this to zero, and there it is, I get two exponents. So just to summarize, we studied the cascades in both cases, and we saw that in a big case, when n is not too big, we see these exponents, and in a strong case, we see some new exponents. And these are the same as the ones which we get from the stationarity condition. In fact, if one looks a little bit more at this Boltzmann-like equation, one sees that if the flux is constant, then the right-hand side will be zero. So these are the same as the stationarity equation. And so the idea is now that we have these fixed points, where the stationarity fixed points, somewhere in the configuration space, and we can start with some initial conditions. And if we are lucky, then the system will evolve such that we hit, or at least go close to this non-thermal fixed point. We spend some time here, but in the end we have to go to equilibrium. If we start from unlucky initial conditions, then we might miss this completely and just go straight to thermal equilibrium. One more point is that this phenomenon is similar to critical phenomena. There's universality, no dependence on coupling, and this n is here, the the O N, because we are thinking of that scalar fields with N components. So that was about cascade, and I show some simulation results. So here we use 3D simulations with O4 and O10. And we assume that the Z is 1 because it's a relativistic theory and we have no anomalous spectral functions. And then I put here the exponent. This is what we expect. And this is also what we see. So after some time, the spectrum becomes stationary, or it's evolving slowly, and one sees that the UV spectrum here is given by 1.5, the infrared is given by 4. It's really nice.
So 0.5 is weak turbulence, or it's equilibrium?
The equilibrium will be 1. Mm-hmm. Here, O10 fields we see in principle the same. No difference. We also did simulations in 4D, although that would be hard to check experimentally, but it's a good way to check this formula, which has the D in it. And in fact, it seems to work out. In this case, with some initial parameters, we see the infrared 5 emerging and the hint of the 2.5 in this region. If we start in another initial conditions with bigger energy density in the initial condition, we still see the 5, but this is the 2.5 is not present there. It is closer to 1, the thermal equilibrium.
You have pile up at k equal to 0?
Pile up?
No, I mean, what happens to the mode with k equal to 0? Is it 0?
Yeah, it always goes off the predicted pile always. We are not sure what's happening, but the energy is all coming from the infrared, so we expect this to... So that behaves as the source of our system.
There isn't anything particularly different going on at d equal to 4 compared to d equal to 3?
No, but apart from this that we here don't see the UV scaling, but the plots as you see here look similar. Now another interesting field theory which you might not expect to see turbulence is a gauge theory. We did some simulations first in another context, we wanted to describe heavy ion collisions and how the guideline instability populates the world. So just in 2 sentences, after a heavy ion collision, the plasma is a highly anisotropic plasma, and some people say that the guideline instability will make it isotropic such that the later evolution can be described in hydrodynamics. And anyway, we did simulations of this, and what we saw that if we run and wait a bit longer than the heavy ion physics would suggest, then we also see pretty nice straight lines on the log-log plot. And then we did the weak turbulence analysis with this diagram, and then we got these exponents. And one of them is the power that describes our system. We also check that this is a stationary solution. So first the system is of course not there. There is not a clear power law here, but it seems to settle around this volume. And after some time we expect that it will go away. So this is what I put here is the power, the exponent of this power as a function of time. Yeah, so this was simulation. Now one more point about the spectral function. So we have heard about this idea that the turbulence is like a critical phenomena. And in critical phenomena, it's not as hard to measure the spectral function, whereas we haven't measured it yet in its full glory, because it's really hard to measure, but in this side we can do it, and here I report of a study that we did in 2D in equilibrium in the Ising universal class, and what we calculated was the spectra function near the critical point, and what we saw that if one is far from the critical point, then there is one peak at some frequency. This is the spectra function of the zero momentum. And if we go closer and closer to TC, then the second peak is here emerging at zero frequency. So there is still remnants of this original peak, but a really high peak emerges here. And in fact, this is this peak in Loblaws. Yeah, this is what determines the scaling. So this is our idea at the moment that this might be similar in the turbulence as well. And we try to measure this, but it's not an easy problem. It's with a huge amount of computer time, we can get such noisy plots. And so this is not really something that you would trust. The thing that you can trust on these plots, look at the huge scales, is where the peak is. At least you can say that there is something. And if I do this in the simulations that Boris presented, these measurements were in the same parameter range, then I can say that I still see the Gogoliov peak. So this is as a function of momentum, the peak, one of the peaks that I see. And the Gogoliov peak is still there, but unfortunately this doesn't say anything about the peak at the zero, so this is an open question. There might be something happening here which we don't see with this method. So to conclude, I have shown you that this weak and strong exponents can be described with cascades, and we did numerical simulations where we seem to see these exponents. There are some open questions. We don't know what this strong turbulence has to do with the Kolmogorov scaling. We still have to find out what eta and z is. And the other things, for example, one could try other resummation schemes, and they would might give other strong exponents. Also, in relativistic field theory, there is no topological defects, so it's not easy to show such a video that Boris showed with these vortex pairs. So we don't know what is happening there. And the last point is here that we have to check self-similarity, and that might give us one more equation between the exponents.
Okay.